Into our second hour, what's cracking? My name is Jim Rome. Welcome to the program. This show is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. A couple of you have asked, why are you not on TV? What's up? I will be in hour number three, but we are on radio. So the simulcast starts just today in hour number three, and we are still doing the program on radio. The jungle version of the radio program is still taking place, and John Rothstein, who was going to join us at the very top, is going to join me next segment. NCAA making some announcements about the tournament and a few more things, so he is on a conference call, and we will move him to the next segment, which means this segment is open. Take advantage. 1-800-636-8686. This reaction to start hour number two. Romy, you're right. I am out there numb. Regards, DJ's nostrils. Ashley in Nebraska.
War lady clone.
No, I was just going to say, don't expect me to war lady clone that, Ashley. Ashley, you shouldn't have. And I know you're better than that, Ash. Stop it. We talked about the Masters. We talked about DJ. I thought the guy was amazing the entire week, but especially yesterday. I want to get in some other aspects of the tourney. What happened to Bryson? What happened to Eldrick? Rory. How about Rory having that horrible opening round and then playing lights out? Of course, it didn't matter at that point. So we will get into all that. Ross Tucker came on and nailed his hit like he always does. He said the Bills-Cards game was the game of the year and mentioned that Hail Mary was the play of the year and the best Hail Mary he's ever seen. So let's get into that, because that was the game of the weekend. And then in the end, it turned out to be the game of the year. But do not take my word for it. Don't even take Ross's word for it. You know whose word you should take for it? Blake Shelton. He tweeted, quote, "My God, Arizona, what a game. Congrats. I died, came back to life, bleeped my pants, and hyperextended my scrotum. All in 30 seconds. End of tweet." Yeah, thanks, Blake. Thanks for that, brah. Thank you very much for that mental picture. Hope you were able to ice up. Hope you're able to ice your junk. Hey, he's right, though, right? If a football game was going to make you die, come back to life, crap yourself, and hyperextend your scrotum, it probably had to be that game. Because that game had everything. It had Josh Allen turning into a wide receiver early on.
A snap. And they give it to McKenzie. He wants to throw. Throws it back to Josh, who makes the catch at the 10. Allen at the 5. Diving into the end zone. Touchdown. Josh Allen catches a touchdown pass. He caught a touchdown pass. Unbelievable.
The only thing missing was him throwing it to himself. If anybody could, Kyler Murray could. Kyler Murray continued to be the most electric guy in the entire game when he showed it with this run.
Snap to Murray, and he's going to keep it off the left side. He's at the 10, at the 5. He's in again. Kyler Murray in the double figures with rushing touchdowns on the season. Some more Murray magic.
Here he comes to save the day. The mighty Kyler Murray.
Cards Radio. And then it had all the action. All the action in the final minute of the fourth quarter. Buffalo down by 3. Josh Allen doing work. Cole Beasley making ridiculous catches.
From the gun. Allen throws it.
He climbs up one hand, brings it in, and gets his feet down after the push by Byron Murphy.
Right? Then Allen comes back. He moves the Bills down into field goal range to tie the game, but he wanted more, and he got it on this play.
The snap. Allen looks to his left, fires left side. In going to the end zone. Stephon Diggs makes the catch. Touchdown, Buffalo. Touchdown, Stephon Diggs.
Wow, Steph Diggs.
And at that point, there's not that much time left on the clock. Steph Diggs, if you need him. That was an absolutely perfect ball and an absolutely perfect catch. And that's not Diggs beating some scrub. He beat Patrick Peterson on that play. And that's if you can even call that beating Peterson, because I'm not sure what more Peterson could have done. That was damn good coverage. But Allen and Diggs still beat it. That trade for Diggs is looking better and better by the game, especially with him leading the league in receptions and receiving yardage, and then coming up with moments like that with 34 seconds left. 34 seconds left. That's not that much time on the clock.
The clock.
That pass from Allen to Diggs was perfection. The Bills win. They move to 8-2. It's an incredible moment for the Bills Mafia. Their team is rolling, and it's time to start thinking about postseason seeding. Run out the 34 seconds, because that, again, is not much time on the clock. Arizona gets the ball at the 25. They pick up 14 yards on their first down. They've got to burn their second timeout. They pick up 9 on the next play. They have to use their final timeout. Then a short pass to Larry Fitzgerald, who's able to get out of bounds. But the play did use up 10 seconds. That's a lot of clock. Then there are 11 seconds are left. Arizona's got the ball in the Arizona 43. Roll it and do it, knowing that Blake Shelton's scrotum is about to get hyperextended.
Murray back to throw, flushed out, rolling left in trouble, slips a tackle, got to launch it. He does. Left side, into the end zone, jump ball, and it is. Is it caught? Is it caught? Oh, my goodness, it's caught. DeAndre Hopkins caught it. He caught it for a touchdown with 1 second left. I can't believe it. You've got to be joking me. Hopkins reaches up with three defenders around him and pulls it in. And the Cardinals lead it 32-30 with a second left.
You can't cover Duke. You're not going to be able to cover him. Throw the ball up.
Like, I don't know how many times I've seen that. Probably 20. I still cannot believe what I'm seeing. That ball was thrown into triple coverage. There were three Bills players right there with DeAndre Hopkins, and it still was not enough. There are three guys right there. Two of them are Pro Bowlers, and Hop is still the guy who somehow came down with that ball. The only guy who could have stopped DeAndre Hopkins from making that catch was Bill O'Brien. Hey-o. Bill O'Brien probably suffered his own hyperextended scrot watching that play. Or worse, if there is anything worse than a hyperextended scrot. But seriously, remember when B.O.B. traded DeAndre Hopkins? That trade was one of the dumbest deals in the history of the NFL at that time, and it looks 10 times worse right now. As Kyler Murray tweeted right after the game, "Sheed, hop down there somewhere." And Hopkins replied, quote, "Never panic." See, that's the thing. And Ross Tucker laid this out, but I want to reiterate this. That was not some fluky play. That was not like the ball bounced around, hit a bunch of guys, and just landed in Nuke's hands when he was lying on his back. That was anything but that. This guy just went up and he got it above three other really good players. He just went up and single-handedly beat three other alphas. Just ripped the ball from three other grown-ass men with the game on the line. He was asked afterwards, "Nuke, how in fact did you do that?"
It was on three people. It was, they were in position. It was just a better catch by I.
Man, what a great quote. I love that so much. Quote, "It was on three people. They were in position. It was just a better catch by I." That was just a better catch by I. Or to put it another way, Hopkins tapped the top of his head in the postgame.
You know, in basketball terminology, that's what they call this. You know, when somebody get dunked on.
That was just a better take by I. And that's the truth. The painful truth. The Bills secondary just got dunked on by Hopkins. Hopkins just dunked on them. Just dunked on the entire up-and-coming, shiny city that is Buffalo. Dunked on B.O.B. again. Like, every time this guy makes a huge play for the rest of his career, Bob's name is going to come up. But as great as that catch was, and it was incredible, do not sleep on the fact that somebody had to get that ball to that spot at that time, because Kyler Murray was totally nuts on that play as well. Run that back one more time.
The snap. Murray pressured. Bills rush four. Murray's in trouble. Gets away from it. Rolls to his left. Fires it downfield. Puts it up for grabs. And it is
caught.
Caught for a touchdown. Unbelievable. Caught by DeAndre Hopkins. Surrounded by a couple of Bills defenders. He went up and brought it down. Unbelievable. Incredible. 1 second left on the clock.
Obviously, Bills radio.
The clock.
He scrambles out. He lets it fly. That ball was caught.
Caught.
How many other quarterbacks, though, can make that play? How many other quarterbacks can keep that play alive, show that kind of escapability, and then throw that kind of a ball against his body that far to that exact spot with the game on the line? Name another guy who can do that right now. And here's something else that's amazing. Cliff and Kyler as a combo. It seems like a no-brainer right now. It seems like a no-brainer now that they're tied for first in the NFC West in their second season together, but it was anything but a no-brainer when Steve Keim and the Cardinals did that. That was ballsy as hell at the time, and it's paying off in a big way right now. What an enormous swing by Keim and the Cards, and one of the smartest things ever. Nobody thinks that now, per se, but at the time, man, that was a big, big, ballsy swing. Now somebody should go check on Blake Shelton and his hyperextended scrot and hit him with a new pair of pants, because he also said that in that moment, he apparently crapped himself.
If any one of you doesn't respect me or what I'm doing or what I've been doing for the last 3 months since it's been announced, going against a guy like this, you'd have a big dump in your pants.
I love that we got some context finally for that quote.
You'd have a big dump in your pants.
In a hypoextended scrotum.
It was just a better catch by I.
It was a better catch by I. One of the best catches by I ever.
It was just a better catch by I.
Let's check out some reaction. Stucknut's in. Quote, isn't Blake Shelton a fat guy, according to Liz in Fall City?
Who was the myopic panel voting on this award? Were they drunk or only handed blurry pictures of Blake? The guy is a fat Ewok disguised as a country hick who allegedly has talent. And with this guy being the sexiest man alive, I seriously fear that clones like Bodie and Pearland are going to feel like they have hope in the looks department.
Boy, Liz. I haven't thought about Liz. What happened to Liz? Like I always say on the program, what happens to any of these people? You know, they come, they're around every single day, and then all of a sudden life happens, and then we don't hear from them. So Liz made her mark with that call, and then spent the better part of the next few years chasing that call and never living up to the hype. And I don't want to say that I had forgotten about Liz, but I certainly hadn't thought about Liz. Because we have not heard from Liz, but she was the one who made that call.
War Lady Clone.
A lot of people have that one great call. Not a lot of people can chase that, though, and live up to it. She had that to say about Blake Shelton when he was announced as the sexiest man alive by People magazine, if memory serves. She said, sexiest man alive. He's a fat Ewok.
Fat.
Did she call him a hick, too? Anyway. Looking at a Woj bomb. Woj drops this bomb on Twitter. Quote, the Phoenix Suns are finalizing a deal to acquire Oklahoma City Thunder all-star guard Chris Paul, according to ESPN. I'll tell you what, if he's healthy, we know he's motivated, so he's got a chip on his shoulder. Paul with the Suns should be pretty fascinating to see. And how about this Hall of Famer bouncing around as much as he does? It's always something. And then he shows up and he plays. And he balls. But there's always something. Right? How about that news over the weekend that James Harden might want to go to Brooklyn to reunite with KD? You imagine James Harden with KD and Kyrie. A better question would be, could you imagine Kyrie being option number three? How do you think that's going to go for Kyrie? And then back to the Suns. If they can get CP3, do you imagine putting him alongside Devin Booker? So you got your point guard along Booker. The hottest team in the bubble could get a CP3 who looked pretty damn good in that bubble himself. Like I said, we know what kind of fuel that guy runs on. If he's healthy and you put him in the backcourt with Devin Booker, and the Suns did look great in the bubble. They look great. Man, the West just gets nastier again in a different way. Thanks to Woj for that bomb. When we come back, I will try to effort John Rothstein once again. And I do want to go back and talk more about the Masters because there was a whole lot of hype about Bryson coming in. And not only did he not live up to it, but was making a lot of excuses afterwards for it too. Bad look. Dell Technologies just announced their Black Friday sale, which means they're releasing new doorbusters every weekday and up to 50% off. Cutting-edge tech for your business. There is no better time to upgrade your small business with the latest laptops and desktops with Intel Core processors, and there is free shipping on everything. Yes, everything. So give Dell Technologies advisors a call. They will identify the right tech solution for your business. You want to call 877-ASK-DELL or go to dell.com/SBBlackFriday. 877-ASK-DELL or go to dell.com/SBBlackFriday.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. Let's change up. We've hit the NFL hard. We've hit the Masters hard. Let's talk some college basketball. We are joined right now by a college basketball insider for CBS Sports, host of the College Hoops Today podcast. Also, good friend of the program, he is John Rothstein. Oh, man, John, what's going on? How are you?
Never better, Romy. Great to be with you.
Good to have you, John. Great to have you here. All right, so a lot going on. The NCAA, John, announced this morning that the tournament, NCAA tournament, will be held in one location and that they are in talks with the city of Indianapolis to host the entire 68-team event there. First of all, what is your initial reaction to that news?
Proactive planning is always better than reactive planning, Jim, and you have to tip your cap to Dan Gavitt and everybody at the NCAA for this. We know that we're in uncharted territory. We know that we're in a once-in-a-century type global pandemic. Now we're in a situation where we have a plan. And after just hanging up on a call with Dan Gavitt, he made it very, very clear that once a team heads to that area where the NCAA tournament is held, and the NCAA is endeavoring to lock up, according to Gavitt, the city of Indianapolis as that host city by January 1st, once a team travels to that city, it will not be permitted to leave until that team is eliminated from the NCAA tournament.
John Rothstein is joining us. John, the tournament has been scheduled to start in Dayton on March 16th and the 17th. Do you still expect it to start at that time, or could you see it moving back at some point?
You know, one of the things that's interesting, Jim, is Dan Gavitt said that, you know, because of the different protocols that have to be in place in order to successfully pull off a tournament in a short period of time, the calendar may not be the same for March Madness as it normally is. It's an imperfect year. It's an imperfect season. But the bottom line is this, Jim, at the end of the day, and I know I might be the perennial optimist, we see so many people succumbing to the negativity that goes on in our world today because of, obviously, everything that is going on in our world today. But at a time like this, you have to look at the positive. Are there programs shut down in college basketball due to COVID-19? Absolutely. Did the Ivy League cancel winter sports last week due to COVID-19? Absolutely. But the facts are the facts. Over 90% of Division I programs as of today are up and running. And the facts are the facts. There's going to be setbacks. There's going to be cancellations. But we're having a college basketball season, and we're having an NCAA tournament. If that doesn't get you excited 7 days a week and twice on Sunday, I don't know what does.
John Rothstein joining us here. Listen, I want to get into the season in a moment and what it's going to look like and what it's going to feel like. Just one last thought about last year, though. If you were to go back to March and the announcement that the 2020 NCAA tournament had been canceled, I mean, John, you are upbeat, you are positive, you are energetic, but how surreal was it not to have March Madness?
It was unfathomable, and you know me pretty well, Jim. You know I'm a big food guy. I felt for 11 months I was working on baking the ultimate cake, and I had mixed it, and I had iced it, and I had sampled the flavor a little bit, and then somebody all of a sudden told me, you can't have dessert.
Man, no doubt, no doubt. So what about from your conversations with college coaches and players, they were working that same cake. From the people you spoke to within, what was the experience like for them?
Well, I think, you know, the ironic thing last season that stood out, maybe more so than past seasons, that, you know, we've obviously had an NCAA tournament, is last year you had a scenario where three of the top eight seeds that were projected for the NCAA tournament were from non-power conferences. Gonzaga was expected to be a one, Dayton was expected to be a one, and San Diego State was probably expected to be a two. You know, Jim, the seasons that we saw at Dayton and San Diego State last season may not be replicated again in the history of their basketball programs. And that's one of the things that I think made the pill a little bit harder to swallow for programs like that, especially as we're starting to see more and more in college basketball, the separation and between the power conferences and the non-power conferences. So I think that was the thing that lasted a little bit longer with me. That and a program like a Baylor that hasn't been to a Final Four under Scott Drew, but has been to an Elite Eight in 2010 and has been to an Elite Eight in 2012, but didn't break through to the Final Four. They don't get an opportunity to punch their ticket. And obviously it felt like Seton Hall with Miles Powell was set up to go to the Final Four for the first time since T.J. Carlissimo took the Pirates there in 1989. Remember, Seton Hall was set up to be a high seed in the East region. That would have meant the first two rounds in Albany, and then the, hopefully for their sake, the third and fourth round at Madison Square Garden. But Jim, we'll never know.
You mentioned P.J. Carlissimo. I think about Andrew Gaze back in the day just lighting up. John Rothstein joining us. John, it's so amazing. Like, when you mentioned Gonzaga, if we were to take a step back for a minute, I mean, really think about this. Gonzaga's number one in the preseason AP poll. And on the one hand, the fact that they're a preseason number one is not a surprise because they've been so good, John, for so long. On the other hand, how crazy is it that we're talking about a program that has been built the way it has, and that a team from the WCC is the number one team in the country even after losing the conference player of the year?
It's unfathomable, and I personally, you know, put Gonzaga down a couple of pegs because I know just how good Philip Petrušev was last year. He was a force inside. I would have had him as a first-team All-American. But lucky for Gonzaga and lucky for Mark Few, they have a guy in Drew Timmy who is tailor-made to inherit the minutes that Philip Petrušev is leaving behind. Timmy last year, Jim, averaged 9.8 points and 5.4 rebounds in just over 20 minutes a game. He will step in seamlessly to the role that was vacated by Petrušev. And Gonzaga, again, very much in the mix for, you know, obviously a high seed in the NCAA tournament. And I think when you look right now at the chemical makeup of this season, at least from 30,000 feet here, as we're 9 days away from opening day, you have programs who are non-blue blood programs that are going to be in position to have their best teams in years. Iowa gets back Luka Garza, obviously a first-team All-American and a guy who averaged 24 and 10 a year ago, but they also are going to get healthier because they add their starting point guard back in Jordan Bohannon, who missed last year due to injury. Illinois, with Io DeSumo and Kofi Coburn back, has a chance, in my opinion, to have its best team since the 2005 team that lost to North Carolina in a national championship game. And then there's other teams that we've discussed, like Baylor, like Creighton, that have a chance to have their best teams that they've had in a very, very long time.
We're talking to John Rothstein for a few more moments. We're talking college basketball, the start of the season, about a week and a half out. You know, John, because everything is so weird with the pandemic and time is so weird, lest we forget that Virginia is still technically the defending champs. What about Tony Bennett and Virginia? How do you think they will show up this year?
Well, it's amazing. Tony Bennett last year was, you know, tied for second in the ACC, won 15 ACC games, second behind Florida State. And, Jim, when you look at things right now from an offensive perspective, Virginia averaged its lowest totals and averages in points per game, field goal percentage, and three-point field goal percentage under Tony Bennett, and they still managed to win 15 ACC games. Now, what's the remedy for a bad offensive team? Great shooting. And that's why if there's one name right now for people from the periphery to put in bold print when it comes to Virginia, it's Sam Hauser. The transfer from Marquette is bigger and stronger than he was 2 years ago when he played for the Golden Eagles. And think about this from a shooting perspective. Sam Hauser has played 3 years of college basketball. He's never shot less than 40% from three, and he's never made less than 63 three-point shots in the season. For a team that struggled to score, Jim, that sounds like a pretty good remedy.
I'll say so. He's a college basketball insider for CBS. He is the host of the College Hoops Today podcast. He is a friend of the program and fired up as always. John Rothstein, my guest. John, great to have you back. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jim. Stay safe, my friend.
Stay safe, John. Great job. John Rothstein, ready for the upcoming season. And as he mentioned, we're 9 days out. NCAA announced this morning that the tournament will be held in a single location and that they are in talks with the city of Indianapolis to host the entire 68-team event there. All right, so we're open until the top of the hour. 1-800-636-8686. Man, they better get that season in. My man is so passionate about it. My man loves it. I'm telling you, like, there are diehards, and then there's the next level that is John Rothstein. I don't know that he could. You want to talk about unfathomable. I don't know that he would endure another shutdown. Not on JR's watch. He loves it. I love how much he loves it. John Rothstein. All right, so you've got your telephone number. Hit me up on Twitter, at Jim Rome. Again, the Woj bomb earlier. The Suns finalizing a deal to land Chris Paul. Like, that's a fascinating deal. In addition to that, coming up, it actually, our last interview is not at the top of the hour, but rather at 11:40. It's an NBA draft prospect, Onyeka Okongwu. When we come back, talk some NBA maybe. Jimmy Buckets back in the news. If it sounds like I'm fascinated with all things Jimmy Butler, it's because I'm fascinated with all things Jimmy Butler. His game, his attitude, his grind, his coffee, his haircut, anything and everything Butler related. I had a lot to say. Hell, Elk had a lot to say about Bryson DeChambeau coming into the Masters. Mostly Bryson had a lot to say coming into the Masters, which is fine. In fact, better than fine if you back it up, but he didn't. Not only did he not back it up, he didn't own it either. So now I've got some things to say about that. That's coming up. And what about you? Where are you? I can carry this thing easy. But where are you? Where is that good telephone call I'm looking for on a Monday? Haven't seen it yet. 1-800-636-8686. I got a sports update for you, though. Here it is.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Check it. All beef jerky is not the same. Old Trapper, thank you, Albie. Old Trapper is better for you and higher in essential protein than chips, sugar-filled energy bars, or candy. Make sure you ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what's your beef?
Check it.
Got a beef segment coming up on Wednesday. Every single Wednesday we do that. So you can look forward to it. Dear Jim, we think Dustin Johnson is really smart. Sign people who get hit by trains.
Who the hell is getting hit by trains? Who are the idiots that made the DOT take a look at us radio listeners as a whole and say, Well, we certainly have to remind this group of people not to walk, drive, bike, rollerblade, or rascal themselves in front of this 5,000-ton moving machine that can only travel on tracks that are really well documented, by the way, even blocked by a barrier in most cases. I can't wait to listen to the campaigns in store for us in the future. Do not have sex with a moving farm combine. And Knife Awareness Month. Knives! They're not hot dog beaks, so don't eat them. Anyway, Rome, provided I don't get hit by a locomotive or sucked through a jet engine while walking my dog, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
How often does Benny and Wisco call outside of the smack-off? Not enough, Benjamin. That was Benny in response to one of our PSAs about not trying trains. Do not try the train. You will lose. And you could die. Because trains can't stop. Alvin. Casey in New Hampshire sent that. Dear Jim. And that's why he sent that. Because we had a public service announcement which airs. And especially during our podcast. Trains can't stop. It's no joke. It is to Benny for some reason. But not to those who have lost loved ones. And a joke to Casey, apparently. Do better. All right, so coming into Masters Week, there was all this talk and all this hype. And it was all about one dude. A behemoth of a man playing the best golf of his career. And all that hype included the fact that he was going to overpower Augusta. Set scoring records. Run away with the tourney. And do things that we have not seen since the Cat ripped the track to shreds back in 97. And that the rest of the sticks were just going to have to sit there and deal with the beating. All correct. All right takes. Except they had the wrong guy. Because Augusta did get overpowered. Scoring records were set. The tournament was run away with. And there were things done that had not been done since 97. Except it was Dustin Johnson, not Bryson DeChambeau, who did all those things. So if you're just checking the final leaderboard for the first time this morning, and you're looking for Bryson, keep scrolling down. You can find him tied for 34th and looking up at 63-year-old Bernard Langer. So exactly what went wrong for the betting favorite? Pretty much everything. Snap hooks, lost golf balls, missed putts, and apparently a self-reported case of dizziness, which I'll get to in a second. But golf is a game of fairways and greens. Bryson brought his worst game then to Augusta, 35th in driving accuracy, 53rd in dance floors. And what that added up to was 11 bogeys, two doubles, and a triple in the second round to have this guy fighting not for the jacket, but just to make the cut, which he barely did, on the number. Now, it'd be one thing to roll down Magnolia Lane, have a bad week, say the right things, and then just get the hell out of there. But this is Bryson DeChambeau we're talking about, right? And he was saying the wrong things before the tournament even started. You know, like calling Augusta a par 67 before he even put a peg in the ground. These are the kind of comments that set this guy apart from everybody else. But the kind of comments that will haunt you forever, especially when you make them and then you go out and you shoot 70, 74, 69, 73. Because if you're going to set your own par at 67, then you better break it at least once. And he didn't even get within three shots of that number in any of his four rounds. And then, instead of stuffing his tail between his legs like he should have, he went to the file cabinet and he started to pull excuses.
I got to fix my whatever's going on up here. I have no idea. It's just dizziness and... You know, it's only when I go from up or from down to up. See, I can't even, like, think and talk right now. But that's just what happens. I go down and up, and my brain just gets all disoriented. So, you know, I got to fix that, and once I fix it, I'll be even better than now, you know. And when something arises in the future, I'll just keep trying to fix it. It's better than where it was on Friday and Saturday, little Saturday, but still, it's tough. I mean, I'm hydrated. Everything's fine. It's just about orientation. There's numerous times where I was over it, and I just felt super uncomfortable. I just couldn't see anything. I couldn't see the line. It was really weird, really weird. I missed a lot of putts because of it today.
I missed a lot of putts because of it. So let me make this very clear. I'm not saying that what he's saying isn't true. Maybe his head was spinning. Maybe he wasn't totally healthy. I'm not saying that that's not true. I am saying nobody gives a damn. And that's a bad look, especially coming from him. I mean, dude, you're a freaking rhinoceros. You're a rhinoceros for one thing. So you probably want to suck that up. And the fact is, nobody really cares how you're feeling. Fact is, nobody really cares how you're feeling, especially since you were out there, especially since you can't stop talking about how awesome you feel and why you feel that awesome and what you did to feel so awesome in the first place. Nobody gives a damn. That's not even a you thing. That's not even an athlete thing. That's a life thing. When somebody asks anyone how they are, 99% of the time, they don't give a damn. And 100% of the time, your answer should be great. How are you? Regardless of how you're feeling. You didn't feel good? Nobody cares. They care about the leaderboard. They care about the scoreboard. And you should know that. You don't get to be the Hulk when everything is going right and you're winning U.S. Opens. And then revert back to Bruce Banner when Augusta National rips your protein shakes and starts to force feed you crow and pimento sandos. You're dizzy. Oh, you're dizzy. Cool. DJ was less than a month removed from a legit COVID diagnosis that put him on the shelf for most of the prep time coming into the Masters. He didn't say a damn thing about it and finished 18 shots ahead of you. This is why the boy who cried Fire Ant has so many haters who glossed him Chryson years ago. And why that nickname's not going anywhere anytime soon. You're supposed to be the baddest dude on the planet. Ask you. Hell, somebody did after the U.S. Open. And you started in on how you would be even bigger and even stronger and even longer when the Masters did roll around and none of that happened. But you did throw the dizzy card, which isn't strong. In fact, it's weak, man. It's weak as hell. Now, don't get this part twisted. I am 100% here for the Bryson show. I think the guy is great for the game. I love the guy's approach. He's the ultimate shock the system guy. I love that. I even love that he's as polarizing as he is because it adds to the storyline. This guy makes the sport so much more interesting. I'm here for it. I am. But as much as this guy has changed, and as much as he's actually changing the sport, one thing remains the same. Red posts, white posts, fire ants, rules officials, photographers, and now dizziness. But it's never Bryson's fault. Not to him, at least. So I don't know, maybe instead of testing 15 driver heads between now and your next event, you start testing out what it would be like to finally own a bad performance. And then you got Tig. After an opening round 68, I got to admit, even I couldn't help but wonder, could this dude have one more miracle in him? I mean, sure, the 68 got a lot less impressive as other guys finished their suspended first rounds and moved the number to 10 under before Tiger even started that second round. But there was legit hope that maybe somehow, some way, he might still contend. Then he went into neutral, and he played 26 holes on Saturday at minus one. So by the time the cat teed it up on Sunday, he was done. 11 shots back. And while my man might still go low, he was not going to go that low. Not 57 low, which is what he would have had to do to even have a chance. That was not going to happen, obviously, and it didn't. But he damn near did shoot 57 on one hole. If you're a member of Honk Nation and you've been searching for that one thing that you can actually relate to the big cat on, ladies and gentlemen, I give to you the defending champ on the par 3, 12th hole yesterday at Augusta.
My, oh my.
Are you kidding me?
This is a golf course that has been oh so kind to Tiger Woods, and it's trying to take all of that kindness back in one hole. This is going to be a big old number on a 158-yard par 3. So he's taken a drop. He's now hitting 8, Butch. Tiger Woods, the defending champion, is hitting 8 on the par 3.
Wow. Oh my gosh, he's going to make a 10 on the 12th hole. Are you kidding me?
Right? Mark it down. That's an H.
Mark it down. That's an H.
That's H.
Mark it down.
H for holy hell. Did the cat just make a 10 on a par 3? Did the greatest golfer ever pick up a bat and card a septuple bogey on the same hole that won him the jacket last year? Did Tiger freaking Woods just write down the worst number in his entire PGA career? Yes. Yes, he did. 23,789 holes played, and we just witnessed his worst ever. An entire sleeve of Bridgestones emptied into Rays Creek. Tee shot into the water, drop shot into the water, second drop into the bunker, bladed bunker shot into the water, drop barely onto the green, missed putt, and then finally down for a 10. Man, golf, baby. Mother bleeping witchcraft. And it even got the cat. He even got the cat. He did come back with 5 birdies in his final 6 holes. But then in the end, he threw out some insane explanations.
Well, I committed to the wrong wind. You know, the wind was off the right for the first 2 guys. And then when I stepped up there, it switched to howling off the left, which in the flag on 11 was howling off the left. And I didn't commit to the wind. And I also got ahead of it.
I didn't commit to the wind.
I thought the wind
was more. My glutes didn't activate. Can't believe I didn't commit to the wind. Yo, that explains the tee shot. Tige, what about the other 9? Third hour's coming up next. Phone lines are open. Don't go anywhere.